Welcome to the new Cyber Frontier, bringing you the latest news on the local Colorado economy and initiatives that focus on the development of cybersecurity economics. You don't have to be a computer or cybersecurity expert to get plugged in. Your host, Chris Gorog, brings it straightforward, asks the tough questions, and brings the cyber world to a level of understanding for everyone. Chris is personable and opens up with our guests on issues we all would like to see addressed. You can find us on the web at www.newcyberfrontier.com. Now join our host as he introduces the topic for today's New Cyber Frontier.
Welcome to today's episode of New Cyber Frontier. On today, we have a couple of gentlemen together from San Antonio, and we're going to talk a little bit about the cyber community there, and also they teach at Hallmark University. We have Griffin Weaver, who is a licensed attorney, and Dr. Jason Edwards, DMIST, CISSP, and also goes by Lord of the Andals, King of the First Men, and we had to throw that one in there for you. So welcome both of you today. How's it going?
Oh, great. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, doing well. Happy to be here.
Definitely. And talking before getting to know you guys, it's an interesting kind of combination of the legal aspect on privacy and security combined with a deep dive into risk. And it brings a new direction, I think, from what I've heard just talking to you guys at the beginning. But first of all, you both kind of give me a little background on yourself, each one at a time, and tell me how you got to be where you're at and what you think the key points of life are.
Yeah, I'll let Griffin go first since he pointed at me to go first.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I'll do it. Thank you. Yeah, so just to give you a little bit of background about me, I'm a licensed attorney here in San Antonio. I'm considered what you call a technology attorney. And so a lot of the different areas of law that I practice in are you think information security, you think privacy, you think new age technology that we're running into. So think IoT, think blockchain, think a lot of the new technologies that are being used and developed within large businesses. And to give you a little bit of background, what started with my interest in technology during undergrad, I actually worked in IT. That's how I put myself through undergrad, was actually working in IT. And then in between law school and my graduation from undergrad, I worked at a software company as a back-end developer. And so it got me a little bit more, into that space, and it gave me a good at least foundation to be able to then go into law school and really understand the underpinnings of the laws that are affecting the space. And I'm now working in San Antonio, teaching at Hallmark University, and it's overall I teach a lot of cyber law, cyber compliance and governance classes, and it's been a really good experience. I think it's a fascinating area that's constantly developing. And if you're in it and you're working in it, I don't think there's ever going to be a dull moment, at least for the next several years.
I hope for.
Yeah. So I'm Jason Edwards, right? So I'm originally from Illinois, but I like to say that the best place to live there now is San Antonio, except for days like this, where it's actually 40 degrees here. So I got started with computers very long time ago with the Apple. Learning how to program on the Apple in middle school and in grade school. And then later on in high school, getting my first dual floppy disk Amstrad PC to play video games on it. And then and joining the Army. And in the Army, I didn't really do a lot with computers for a while, but I always loved them. So later on, I became a cyber officer, an IT officer in the Army, finished after 22 years, retired here in San Antonio, and started to work in the private sector. And eventually came around to financial services, which is where me and Griffin both work now at USAA. And of course, teaching at night and on the weekends with Hallmark University. And that's really become our passion as education. So we go around, we do conferences, we do presentations to try to, enlighten people on the careers, not only in cybersecurity, but the careers outside of cybersecurity that have a cybersecurity or IT tilt, right? And one of the most interesting things we deal with a lot is students, who get out of the military after 20 years and are looking for a new career, but don't really want to be a network administrator, right? They're a little bit older than the normal crew. And so what we do is, we explain to them all the different careers in audit, compliance, risk, management, testing, many, many different areas. things. But yeah, I would say our passion lately has really been teaching. And Hallmark's a great school. It's a Christian nonprofit, right? So you feel good about working there, and the people there are really great. The students are great.
Awesome. Well, let's take a break here from our sponsor. We'll be right back to talk to Griffin and Dr. Edwards again.
Cyber Resilience Institute helps build strong cyber communities designed to prevent members from attack. Like building a neighborhood watch, it takes coordination and a sharing community to protect our identities and valuables in the virtual world. Typically, we hear that organizations know they need to do something to protect their cyber assets, but don't know where to begin. Let Cyber Resilience Institute help your community create an action plan. Cyber Resilience Institute will build your community or business marketplace so that it is designed to support a collective cyber defense. Contact them for more information at cyberresilienceinstitute.org.
Welcome back to New Cyber Frontier. On today, talking to Griffin Weaver and Dr. Jason Edwards, an attorney and a cyber practitioner, and a great combination. One of the first things that crossed my mind, and I haven't really had anybody on that from San Antonio to talk about the area, but tell us about, you know, we hear so much being Colorado, Colorado Springs, Denver, being a big cybersecurity area, about San Antonio being kind of an equivalent, you know, area that really focused on cybersecurity. Talk to us about what you see in that local area and the economic development around cybersecurity.
Well, I think in this area particularly, right, even in Austin, right, as you look at it, is growing, but not only with technology, but cybersecurity in particular. But San Antonio, of course, we're a little bit biased, right? San Antonio, first of all, is a place to live and to grow a family and to raise your kids is an amazing place to live. It's temperate year round. There's really good people. We have a great Hispanic, you know, heritage here. We have our Spurs. We have our San Antonio hockey team, the Rampage, you know. Great schools and a lot of people coming in from other states, you know, now moving into Texas and to San Antonio. But what a lot of people don't realize is that, you know, we have the most military bases of any city in the country, and we're actually called Military City USA. The Air Force, the Army, the Navy, the Marines, they're all here within San Antonio. And of course, the Air Force has a huge joint cyber command here that they operate out of Lackland Air Force Base and a few others, Kelly Hill and a few other places. So we have a ton of students, both in our school. We have a lot of, you know, fellow employees at USA, all came out of the military, of course, all did cybersecurity IT here in San Antonio. And of course, all these other companies here are growing with that, right? Because you have such a great base of technological people coming out of the military, being trained here in the military. I'm friends with several Air Force reservists that work here at USAA and are actually cyber intel, you know, in their military careers. But, you know, and not just that, right? You have USA here, the home of USA. You have many other companies, but it's really something unknown. But people love to come here. They come here for the job, but they stay because of the culture in the city. It's a beautiful place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I mean, I think what's also helping drive San Antonio being such at least at the forefront in this field also has to do with the schools like Hallmark that's investing heavily in these programs. You've got UTSA as well that's investing heavily in this area also. So there's a lot of kids that are coming here to be able to get educated in this space, and then they're staying because a lot of the companies that Jason mentioned, like USA, like HEB, like a lot of the big companies, and they're going to, I think it's just constantly revolving, you know, as you build up that network. And with Austin, just a, you know, sort of a rock's throw north of here, and a lot of tech companies coming into that space. Mm-hmm. It's just also increasing the number of people here with the background, or at least getting educated in that background here within San Antonio.
And like Hallmark, right? You have quite a few military, you know, that are actually active duty military, or they're active duty civilians working in these career fields in the military, are actually teaching at night. So, you know, we have a guy who one of our great fellow instructors. He's been doing pen testing for 20 years. You know, he's been working in cyber intelligence and cybersecurity for over 20 years before it was even a thing. And he's one of our instructors, you know, so it's that kind of a background and depth of study and stuff that you get with a lot of the people here in San Antonio.
Yeah. Do you guys see it more of a military security government type of a thing, or commercial and private sector?
I don't really think there's a difference. And to be honest with you, because what happens is, and I'm a great example, right? I'm a product of the military. You know, I joined when I was 17 and I retired when I was 40. Mm-hmm. Because we all transition out one way or the other, right? All of us, we're continuously flowing. Everything that goes in the military comes out as a private sector civilian at some point mm-hmm. in their career. Some is reservists, they're right away. Some is not. But the great thing that you have is the military is just unmatched with its training and its the amount of money that they can spend on teaching folks. And of course, right here in San Antonio, you have the product of that. You know, you have a lot of Air Force reservists, a lot of reservists from different services. You have active duty that's retiring that mm-hmm. choose to be here. So, for example, I was actually at Fort Hood and I chose to retire here in San Antonio just because of the number of military institutions and bases for support. And you're going to see a lot of that with many, many of the retirees here. They're going to get out of the military with 20 years of service, want to dedicate their lives into the private sector. And that's just an amazing amount of experience and technological, you know, education that you just don't normally have in a community.
Interesting. You know, one of the things that we always have around here is the dynamic of jobs that require security clearances and those that might not, that might be private sector. Do you have a good balance there, or would you say a lot of have-nots with security clearance is an issue with students coming out of college?
Well, no, you have, and the thing is, too, is again, even though we're a military city, we have, and you know, we have large employers like USAA, you know, you still have quite a few other organizations that are here, mm-hmm. Thousands of organizations here that need cybersecurity and IT experience, and they are more than happy to hire the military or whoever has that technological skill, right? But the great thing about San Antonio is we don't usually have to convince people to move here, right? Once you come down, you see the Riverwalk, you see the Alamo, you see our historic sites. Whether you're a Spurs fan or not, you know what I mean? People just want to move here. And again, the great schools for the kids.
Yeah.
You know, great place to live. Temperate all year long. No yeah. ice. You know, no hail.
Definitely. And you know, as is Colorado Springs, a lot of people come here, choose to live here as well. So I've been to San Antonio. Yeah. Loved it there as well. Definitely. All those things you say are definitely true. So now we step back and we say, you know, each of you have a little bit of different perspective on cybersecurity, different direction you come at it from. What areas do you see as being the hottest things that need to be addressed or are being addressed or the biggest gap areas? Where do you spend the most of your time focusing?
You know, a lot of things we do too, especially is dispelling myths, right? So a lot of people come into a cybersecurity program or they come to work at a place like USA and they think that everything in cybersecurity is them fighting back against a Russian attacker over a duel of keyboards, right? Something mm-hmm. sexy. And in many cases, believe it or not, there are more other, you know, other non-direct skills, for example, for cybersecurity that people need to do. And one of those, I know it's going to sound a little boring to most people, but it's third-party risk management. Over the past 10 years, right, there's been an explosion of outsourcing, explosion of vendors in the field. And as you can see, of course, there's 1,000 vendors for any kind of technology that you want out there. Well, when financial institutions, when companies start employing them, in the past, they kind of thought that they could offset that risk by using this vendor. You know, oh, if something happens, it's on the vendor, it's not on us. And what you've seen now, and Griffin can talk to this, is that that has changed over the past 5-10 years to where everybody understands now, regardless of the vendor that causes you the security risk or the breach, it's completely on your company, right? So third-party risk management, making sure that those people that you trust with your data that are not in your office every day are doing the right thing, I think is a big, it's a big area right now. And Griffin, what do you think?
Yeah, no, I actually agree. Jason's absolutely right about companies now outsourcing more than they've ever done before. I think the numbers sort of prove that when you start looking at the data. And I think one of the things that has come to light, at least in this approach, that a lot of companies were overlooking had to be the contractual protections, right? A lot of the times where companies are like, I just need this service, or I just need this product, and I need this good. Let me just sign whatever it is, and then we're good. I can forget about it. And now, because as Jason mentioned, you know, you're on the hook if your vendor that you went out and procured that service from, they breach, you're handing over data and there's a breach, you're going to be on the hook for it. So now you need to really be overseeing them, making sure you really have the right protections in place contractually and that you're overseeing them on an ongoing basis going forward. And it's a new it's a new mindset that's taking over in the industry, but it is a different approach, at least for more companies now, because it's not just regulated to one industry, right? We're starting to see it in multiple industries, and so they're having to get sped up.
And really the biggest damage in any kind of attack, especially like with a vendor, is your reputational damage. And companies, you know, you can be on Fox News tonight, you know, because of something happens with a third party vendor, and there's really nothing you did to control it or can do to even to fix it in some cases. But that reputational damage, especially like in the financial industry, which really hinges upon reputation and trust, right? That can be lost in a day because, you know, you made the wrong choice with the wrong vendor.
All right. Well, let's hear from our sponsors. We'll be right back after a minute to talk more about this and third-party vendor risk. Be right back.
Security Services are your cybersecurity experts with decades of experience providing professional training services for our clients in various industries. We offer professional training and certification in areas of cybersecurity, safety, health, and environmental services at our academy. Our in-person and online training provides a collaborative environment where students can interact directly with instructors through live chats or in private classrooms. Visit MurraySecurityServices.com for more information.
Welcome back to New Cyber Frontier. On today, talking with Griffin Weaver, a licensed attorney, and Dr. Jason Edwards, who is a doctor of management in information security technology and CISSP. Before the break, we were talking about your thoughts on one of the biggest risk areas in cybersecurity, third-party vendor management. Now, one of the things you preluded it with, and I forget who did this, was it's not too sexy, right? So as far as this organization, this process, and I heard a contractual requirements, mentioned, is this all a manual, just paperwork and filing, keeping track of who's doing what, enforcing these contracts? What is this comprised of? If somebody would actually go into this field, what could they consider a normal day's job or a week's job, or what would it look like?
You know, and that's a great example, right? This is one of those kind of, I wouldn't say a soft skill, but it's not, it's where you need to have the cybersecurity understanding and education and technology knowledge. But right. So many different jobs just within third-party risk management. I could probably name at least 20 right off the top of my head, but let me give you an example of one. With most large organizations, when they contract out with another vendor, they actually have to send a person to the other vendor's site to inspect them. Right. So think about like a PCI DSS QSA, right, where they're going to go out and they're going to test another organization to a set of skills. That's exactly what, for example, all financial institutions do. USA is no exception. Right. We have teams of people that do that. They go to another vendor. They go out to their company. They make sure they look at their policies, their standards, their procedures. They essentially do an audit or an inspection of that company to come back and determine if they meet the standard of whatever company they work for and if they're going to be secure enough to hold their data. And especially if it's more sensitive data or sensitive information that you're letting that vendor use, right? You know what I mean? Is the higher the risk. So in that case, you're talking about a lot of cyber guys who and gals who actually go out there and travel and do this kind of documentation and do this work and on-site inspections and reviewing procedures and cameras and whatnot. It's a very hands-on thing. And then on the other hand of it, you have management, third-party risk management, which is a lot of procedures and documentation, but that documentation, those contracts like Griffin relies on people, not only with his cybersecurity knowledge, but he relies on people to work with him to ensure that contract states what, you know, what we really needed to do and what they're going to do. Right, Griffin.
I agree, and I think you mentioned, is it just paperwork? And Jason's right, it isn't. You really need to understand the relationship. I mean, this is part of the soft skill of speaking with the other side and getting to understand their business. Because a lot of the time, I mean, let's be honest, when you're buying a good, there's always a salesman on the other side. Mm-hmm. And so sometimes you got to see through what the sell is and actually get to the meat of what they're actually going to be providing, how they're going to provide it, and to see if it's right for your company and that they're going to do it in a way that's safe and secure. And so you need people who can really see through that and get to the inner workings of it to be able to protect your company.
Especially in some cases, like we deal with foreign vendors, right? So sometimes you'll deal with an American vendor, but they may have foreign subcontractors, right? Which we call like fourth parties. Now you're talking about the cybersecurity, you know, assessor there has to start working out, well, which parts of that company are done in which company, which country, and what is the risk that that's going to play into your country? And those are big decisions for a cybersecurity person. These are like level two, level one seniors that are doing this kind of work, and they're making huge contributions, you know, outside of just, you know, for example, the traditional work is just, you know, for example, looking at incidents in a SOC or something, which is also important.
Yeah, this is a really interesting because I talk to a lot of, we'll say student level, younger people that are wanting to enter the industry. And some of them are like, well, I'm not exactly a technical person. I'm learning cybersecurity because it interests me, but I'm finding out, you know, I don't want to be sitting there writing Python. What other industries can I get into? And this is a perfect example of that. Can you, for those type of listeners, explain what they would do to prepare themselves for a job, for a role in this area?
Well, in this area, one is, you know, you got to learn the basics of cybersecurity IT, right? So we deal with this a lot, especially at Hallmark, right? Some of our students are older or they're doing career changes and they can't just suddenly start working at a entry level position in a networking shop, right? They're shooting a little bit, you know, higher, or they need to do a different kind of job. So one thing, for example, at the school we offer a lot of testing, auditing, compliance, legal, risk. Right. Just to give you an example, in some companies, you can have several thousand people employed in technology areas that are actually more than they do have in the technology area, financial institutions included. Right. There's going to be dozens of auditors, hundreds of risks professionals, hundreds of compliance professionals, just to make sure that the cybersecurity department, which may not be that big, is actually functioning. And then, of course, you got like legal careers. Look at Griffin. I mean, he has a deep knowledge of it, but he chose a legal career. I mean,
and Jason's just saying that because if I can do it, anybody can do it.
And he'll sue me. But no, to be honest with you, so you'll look at a lot of schools, like compliance is a great example of it. Ensuring that your company follows the law, you have to have cybersecurity people there. 5-6 years ago, auditors, for example, were not technology people, right? Auditors traditionally are financial employees, right? They're CPAs. Mm-hmm. Used to be the key to becoming an auditor. But these large banks and stuff, they start sending out auditors to ensure that the people they're giving loans to are doing what they're supposed to be doing. Well, they need a technical person to go out there and look at their cybersecurity. They need a technical person to go look at their IT. They mm-hmm. can't just send a CPA out there anymore with a book with photos in it asking people to see their IP tables, right? You need to have that kind of experience. And of course, like I said, they're not sexy. You don't hear about them on the TV. You know, you don't see those in the advertisements for cybersecurity, but they're absolutely key to making the whole system work.
Yeah. And just to add on that, I mean, if you're running into students that are saying, hey, you know, I don't want to be, you know, neck deep in Python coding. I don't want to do all of that. But I mean, I'm interested in the industry. There's a lot of opportunity too, because when you really start to look at where the industry is going, there's a huge push now on the governance end of it. And Jason mentioned the compliance end, and you need to have soft skills at this level, especially in these industries, because at the governance end, if you're going to be a leader in cybersecurity, you've got to communicate to the board of the company a lot of the time, senior executives, and a lot of the time these people do not have any background in technology. It's hard for them to understand, so you've got to be able to speak to them clearly and at a level that they're going to understand. And likewise in these other roles. And so those soft skills, the ability to communicate, play a huge advantage in your career going forward. And so you don't have to be technically, you know, advanced, but if you can explain, you know, basic simple concepts and be able to rely on those technically, you know, deep knowledge individuals that might work under you or with you, then I think you can do a lot and achieve a lot.
Okay, if I was structuring my resume as one of those people, what kind of things would I want to have on there to show that I would be successful in those type of jobs?
You mean as far as like a compliance professional or something like that? Absolutely. Well, one is to show that you have the technical skills, right? The leadership skills. It's similar to how project managers need to have the ability to communicate, to plan, and to organize. That's the kind of people you want. So kind of like the reverse of what we were just saying, imagine a compliance person, right? Everybody usually thinks that, well, if I need to find out about the law, I just go grab a lawyer. But in a large organization, for example, that's not the case. There's very few attorneys at Griffin's skill level, and they can't be, you know, around to the 8,000 IT people that need their advice. So you have what's called a compliance cadre, right? A group of people called compliance. And what they do is they take the lessons, they take the information from it and the interpretations that people like Griffin give them, and they go around and they translate that into technical speak to say, yeah, this definitely has to have encryption, or this, okay, we can live without encryption on that connection, or whatnot. You know, those are the kind of people. And those kind of people, one, they need to have management ability. They need to have skills around speaking, communicating, writing, documenting, you know, especially if you're going to be an auditor, documentation, a method, you know, just showing that you're very methodical approach in what you do. But also you need to have at least a higher level understanding of compliance and technology. So what you'll see is a lot of people in these kind of career fields will go out, they'll get their bachelor's degree, and then they'll turn around and get a master's degree to show that they have the management potential or whatnot. Now, in some cases too, there's actually courses in this. So as part of the Hallmark master's program, Griffin actually teaches an entire course on law, risk, and compliance, which you don't really see very often.
Interesting.
Yeah, and I think for a resume, I mean, having put down, as Jason mentioned, you know, their technical capabilities, I think a lot, and if you can communicate, because a resume is basically a letter that you're sending into a potential employer, if you can communicate clearly and then get into that interview and show that you're very personable, easy to communicate with, and clearly articulate yourself, I think that's going to play a huge role getting that job.
And to give you kind of like an example of this, in the Army around 2004, they took a lot of officers like myself. I was an armor officer and a scout, right, M1 Abrams. And they took a lot of us with our computer degrees and turned us into IT officers. And they wanted us to do it because we had the ability to explain to an armor commander, to an infantry guy, to an artillery guy, what he needed to know about technology. We were able to do that translation. And that's really what auditing, compliance, and risk in those kind of professional areas are about.
Interesting. So, and that's a good to hear for, you know, our listeners that are in transition. I think that's a great talk. And one thing that we had jotted down also is that as you get into compliance, third-party risk, governance across borders, countries, states, we're running into some issues with how things move forward. Go into that from the legal point there, Griffin.
Yeah, from the legal. I think that's a good discussion topic, meaning right now, if you really look at the state of the legal landscape in this field, so think about IT, think about information security and privacy, there's varying approaches if we look at it globally. I think one of the things, if you go over to Europe right now, they have what's a comprehensive approach, meaning that privacy, information security, sort of, it covers all industries and it's across, you know, the whole state or the country where that law has been implemented. But in the United States, we take a much different approach. We call it more of a sectorial approach, right? So you're going to have an information security law that's strictly for financial institutions. And then you're going to have one that's strictly for educational institutions and then energy institutions. You know, we can break it down by the sector at the federal level. And then you can take it another level down into the states. And we're going to divide it into each state's going to have their own take on that law and what a company should do. And it's becoming difficult for many companies, because if you think about today's marketplace, most companies do businesses across state lines. And so they're going to have to be cognizant of all these different states where they do business and be able to comply with those varying laws or legal regimes that they run into. And a lot of companies aren't really paying attention to all the changes and the subtle differences in between state from state or from industry to industry. Mm-hmm. And so they're then hit with, let's just say some notices or letters to where they're like, uh-oh, we've got to fix this. And we had no idea we should have been fixing it. And so this is a challenge we're starting to see now, at least in today's marketplace.
So how do we manage that landscape? What's the best approach?
I wish there was like a best approach. I think one of the main things I think companies can do to really at least try to stay on top of it is make sure you've got an attorney. Yeah, I don't want to act like I'm foot stomping for, you know, my profession here, but I mean, you want to have an attorney in this space that can keep you informed. And also too, depending on the size of the company, a lot of the time you want a compliance officer in there for not just, you know, this industry, but for other reasons as well. But at least then they can also be another set of eyes looking out for these new laws and subtle differences and changes to make sure that the business, you know, you can continue to do what you do best, providing that good or service to mm-hmm. the consumer, and at the same time remain compliant, so you're not getting hit with a fine or, you know, some type of enforcement action that stops you from being able to stay in business.
So now, if you were either of you can answer this, if you either of you were Lord of the Andals and King of the First Men for the day, what would you say? This is what we should do as an industry, as a country, as a society.
And that's a good question, right? And you look at it, and the first thing you think of is, well, why is it so fragmented, right? And you just look at the fact that the way our democracy is structured versus other countries, right? So Europe, when they created the European Union, they created it so that when they created a law like GDPR, all the member countries have to adopt it. And that's just all there is to it, right? So, of course, the United States, we're more of a federated country, right? We're as you've seen, of course, over the past decade and more recently, of course, where the federal government just is the passing laws, right? So they're not reacting as fast of it. So it leaves it up to the states to make these kind of decisions, right? And so the states are running out there, like with California's Privacy Act, they're going to be the first in the nation for that. Or New York Department of Financial Services, they were the first in the nation for their cybersecurity law, right? You're going to see this patchwork like Griffin was talking about. So what do you do as a company, right? Aside from absolutely you must have, well, first of all, you've got to have legal representation in this. It's not just an option anymore, right? You're going to have cybersecurity insurance, and you're not going to do that without a lawyer advising you or a compliance officer. But you got to go out there and decide, you know, how you're going to approach it. And the great thing about cybersecurity is that cybersecurity, when you look at the individual risk, is pretty much the same, regardless of the law, right? They're going to say you need to encrypt your data or you need to protect your data. For example, if you're looking at the GLBA, or you protect your non-public information if you're looking at like New York DFS. But the great thing about it is we have in the United States an open source organization that does a lot of this for us that no one else has, right? It's called NIST. So the first thing your company needs to do is take a look at the NIST cybersecurity framework or any framework if you're going to be ISO, COVID, you know, whatnot, but adopt a cybersecurity framework and start looking at those risks, for example, in the NIST CSF that are identified in there, protecting your data at rest, protecting your data in transit. 100% protecting your data at rest or protecting your data in transit, for example, are going to be covered under almost every law, right? So I would recommend a lot of companies look at a framework that's just good security. And in many cases, that is 90% of the law. Now, many laws are going to have compliance requirements such as certifying or doing specific things or creating certain reports or maintaining documentation. And that's where really you need that cybersecurity compliance or that IT compliance and that IT, you know, cybersecurity legal representation to get you through. But adopting a framework, and I would always, of course, recommend the NIST cybersecurity framework. We teach it at Hallmark, and I think it's just probably, you know, one of the best in the world right now. But I think that's very advantageous for any company to do, and I would recommend it.
All right. So kind of as we're reaching our time here, anything you guys would like to get out for our audience to engage with you on, to connect with you on any services you offer, I'll give you the opportunity to do that now.
Well, I mean, we love LinkedIn. That's, you know, that's what I do. I love posting on LinkedIn. If you ever get a chance to come to my profile, it's linkedin.com/in/trackpads or whatnot. I post some funny stuff plus some information that usually drives Griffin up the wall. He's usually sending me notifications, so please take that off the internet. But no, absolutely. Just join in the conversation with a lot of these areas. Get involved. If you have questions about some of these careers or education, absolutely would love to help you and give you some feedback if you can.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think LinkedIn for me as well. Just reach out.
All right.
Happy to.
And maybe we can have you guys back on occasionally as a kind of representative for some of the key cities doing cybersecurity and really in the trenches, if you guys would like that.
Absolutely. And as long as the North remains free, the kingdom is not to go. Stop that at season 8.
All right. Hey, it's been great talking to both of you, Griffin and Jason, and you guys have a great day.
Hey, thank you. You too.
All right. Bye.
We hope you have enjoyed this episode of New Cyber Frontier. Remember, please follow and participate as New Cyber Frontier is supporting a grassroots community effort to empower the individual in the digital age. Check it out at privacyforthepeople.org. Also, make sure to join our mailing list so we can keep you informed. If you have an idea, if you have a question you would like to hear answered, or if you just want to get involved in what we're doing, reach out to us at newcyberfrontier.com. We also encourage you to visit our sponsors' links because they are the ones that really make this show possible. We look forward to seeing you on the next episode of New Cyber Frontier.